pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is Saraswati Ramamurthy, co-founder at Learning Matters, a Bengaluru-based education technology organization that is transforming the way teachers teach and students learn. An early childhood education ECCE expert by heart and passion, she has worked in various facets of the education domain as an educator and educationist for more than 20 years. Her core expertise is in designing and developing educational curricula and programs, teaching children, training teachers, as well as creating digital education products and programs. Saraswati started her rich career in education with two MS degrees from Purdue University, USA, one in child development and family studies, and another in special education. She is also a proficient and skilled writer and public speaker. She is especially passionate about empowering and enabling women, something very close to her heart. Listen in as Saraswati shares her life's journey, especially with Learning Matters and beyond. Saraswati, it's amazing to have you finally on You and I with Rashmi Shetty.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. And I'm curious to know what little Saraswati was like to the Saraswati that the world knows you today as.
Okay. So we're talking about many, many years from little Saraswati to the Saraswati of today. So I would have to say that my younger self, we moved around a lot when I was a child, moved around a lot within India. So as my father wasn't in the armed forces, that's the question I usually get, but he, regular management job. But as he grew in his career, naturally, he kept getting promoted. And as you get promoted, you have to manage larger regions and areas. And so we moved around a lot. We crisscrossed between Bombay, Visakhapatnam, Calcutta, and then finally Chennai. So I would have to say that my early years were heavily influenced. And I think both little Saraswati and big Saraswati are, definitely a product of all the moving around in India and having lived in so many different places with such vibrantly different cultures and languages. Very proud of saying that I studied in almost every educational board there is that India has to offer. CBSE, ICSE, Madhyamik, which is the West Bengal State Board, and just about everything, right? I think little Saraswati, I think had to every 3 years or 4 years, the moving around, making new friends, that itself consumed a lot of time and energy and effort, right? But I enjoyed it. And, I can definitely say that, the journey, pun intended, was very long and, there were many journeys in between. But I hugely attribute my ability to be so flexible. You can airdrop me anywhere in any situation. And I'm fine, and whether it's conversing with people or connecting with people because I know so many different languages. I think definitely my childhood and having lived and grown up in so many different parts of India has had a very strong impact on that. I hear from my parents that in my very young years, I was a very willful child. And, if I wanted something, I wanted it right away. And did all of those, the tantrums, which is shocking to people who know me because that quickly changed. So I'm known as the patient one. I'm the one that chose to work with children as a career, right? So for that, you have to have infinite patience to be a teacher. So the very little, very, very little Saraswati and the Saraswati of today are, I think, huge contrasts. I spent a long time in the United States as well. I went there to study and then I worked there for many years. So, you know, I think the having moved around so much, having lived in so many places, I think the experiences, life experiences that one gets are just, you know, uncountable and incredibly rich. And I think I'm very happy that I was fortunate to have had those experiences.
Wow. So we have a treasure chest now to put our hands into to find out what are the different influences you've had. Now, you spoke about having been in different cities. So obviously somewhere spending your energy, making new friends and making your presence felt in new places helped you explore different elements of Saraswati, the girl. Were you somebody who forced yourself to come out very early so that you can make new friends because you knew your time was limited in a space? Did that pull you out of your comfort zone faster?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a very sort of very astute observation and question on your part, Rashmi. I think absolutely correct. You know, when you move and when you go into a new school, you know, at age, you know, I think it was second standard and then again at fifth and then again at seventh and ninth and so on. Definitely. I mean, there is a coming out of your comfort zone to quickly understand the culture that I'm in now. You know, what works, what doesn't, you know, a few days of observation to figure out who should I be, you know, who should I be here, you know, and that's a, you know, I would say it's both. I think it's a good ability to have because I am quite a chameleon when it comes to observing, you know, people, mannerisms, culture, you know, even, you know, people who know me very well, the people closest to me, you know that I can organically and automatically change my accent where I am. I don't think about it. It's not something conscious, but it happens. And I think all of these things do you know, are definitely a product of all of the experiences. And yes, definitely, when you know you're in a new school, you know, everyone already has their set trends, right? Now you have to sort of either break into a clique or a group to be one of them and to become close enough to enjoy the joys of friendship, right? I mean, not just be someone who's kind of like, you know, on the sidelines. No. So there is a lot of thought. There is a lot of effort that goes into also figuring out, you know, who among all these children are the right friends for me? You know, who has a personality like me? Yeah. Who shares the interests I have? And figure all that out and then sort of, you know, convince them that you know they should befriend you. So it's a lot for young children to do, but I think it also makes us very hardy and very resilient in many ways. You know, I can start a conversation just for anyone, right? So and I know there are people who are so sort of afraid of you know, having to make small talk or you know, or just, you know, like, oh, can't be bothered to make small talk, you know, but not me. You can drop me with anyone and I'll strike up a conversation. So I'm not sure if I answered your question.
So when I asked you that question, it's a lot to do with who you are today, Saraswati, because these influences in the childhood play a big role on how we face life. And there comes a time when you pause, you look back and you realize that there are so many nuances of life that we have learned without even knowing the lesson was coming through. And I'm sure when you went to college, for you to find yourself in any clique wasn't a challenge at all. So where did you do your graduation? And then on, how did life move?
Yeah, absolutely correct. I think your reading of how this this pans out is spot on. I did my undergraduation in Chennai at the Etharaj College. I did my bachelor's in nutrition and dietetics. And I also stayed in a hostel then. My parents had moved to Muscat then.
Okay.
And my younger sister moved with them because she was still in school. Because I was just entering college, they didn't want to sort of, you know, upset the apple cart. So I stayed back. And of course, the being a hostelier also has a tremendous influence on one, you know. I think those who've been in hostel can eat any food anywhere, right? I mean, we're like, bring it on, you know. I've seen everything, right? So, but I did my undergraduate in Chennai. I really enjoyed it, you know. Three best years of my life, right? So, yeah. And after that, I did 1 year of master's in SIET, what was called SIET then, now it's called Justice Bashir Ahmed Syed College for Women. I did a 1 year of master's in child development. They would be one of the very few colleges that offered that course then, and that was the course I wanted to take. And then I moved to the US. I had applied there, and so I moved to the United States in 2000. I did one bachelor's in child development and family studies from Purdue University in Indiana. And then I followed it up with a second degree in special education. So I had some interest in understanding children with different needs, special needs. So I did another bachelor's. And then I started working. So I was hired by the university as full-time staff to work in one of the child development programs on the campus itself, which was a wonderful experience. And so my career started off from there.
Okay.
So,
and what drew you into children with special needs, Saraswati? What was it about? Did you have anybody? Did you know anybody? Because at that time, I don't think in the late 90s, people were talking about special education at all. So what drew you into that space?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think people then weren't talking about special needs. It wasn't even recognized as something. Although I have to say that in the United States, like the United States probably was, India took a much longer time to, you know, understand, recognize, and understand that it's something that we have to help these children with. For a long, long time, these children were kept hidden away. And I think they still are. They still are, to be very frank. They're kept hidden away. Parents are embarrassed. Families are embarrassed. They don't know what to do with them. They don't like to admit they have a child with special needs and so on. What drew me to it was I was very interested. I did have one or two children that I had worked with who had different kinds of special needs when I was a teacher and they were students in my class. And maybe it was from there that I thought, you know, it would be nice to at least understand, even if I don't end up working exclusively with children with special needs, but it would still be so wonderful for me to be able to understand as a teacher if there is a child who has slightly different needs than others, you know. And so I think that's what motivated me to do it. And although most of my career, when I was working with children or when I was designing programs for children, most of it tended to focus on children with typically developing children and a little bit with those with special needs. You know, but as I explained to my own, to my own sons, when you see a child with a different need, you know, it's a perspective, right? I mean, if our eyes don't work well enough, we wear glasses, don't we? Yeah. And it's perfectly fine, isn't it? Because society has deemed that it is okay to wear glasses, it is okay to wear a hearing aid, it is okay to have a wheelchair or to have a stick or something for support if you can't walk well. Why hasn't that rationalization extended to other kinds of needs as well, right? I mean, you know, a child with Down syndrome or a child with autism, their mind works differently from ours. And I think if we're able to understand that, I think even parents don't understand that. And it's also because where is that awareness, right? Where is the awareness even to parents? You know, if they first understand and understand how to behave normally or how to normalize these needs, I think that will translate into society, right? So, but anyway, that's how my interest in special needs started. I didn't end up doing a lot in that domain.
Okay, and then once you did that, you worked there, and what brought you back to India then?
Very simple. I think I have been there for about 13 years. I lived in the United States for 13 years, my husband for 14. We met there in college. And I think once we had our children, and the children were fairly young then, they were still like, you know, one-ish and four-ish. We just started feeling like while life there was very nice and everything was set, something big was missing. Okay. And it was this, what was it? You know, we couldn't quite articulate it in words. It was more like a feeling here, you know, like something is missing. This doesn't feel complete. It doesn't feel like home. You know, there's the vibrancy, there's some color that's missing. And so we just decided, I think we just have to get back. I think that's home. And we just decided, and one year, we said, this is the year. And both of us left. Both of us left the United States and came here without jobs. So, you know, we were huge risk takers in that sense. We said, that's okay, we'll figure it out. If it takes a few months, we'll figure it out. But when we came, neither of us had jobs here. And when I came back here, and right from the next day, it felt like the 13 years in between had never transpired, you know, which sounds crazy, but then I thought to myself, if I'm so ready to forget those 13 years, then I think this is where I should be, isn't it? So, you know, and we didn't bring anything back with us other than books and photographs and, you know, little keepsakes and memoirs of places. We came back with whatever we could stuff into suitcases, you know, that's, you know, like my Harry Potter book collection and all of that was too precious to leave behind. So things like that we brought back. Everything else we either sold or gave away. And we've never regretted it, not even once. So
that's such a beautiful moment of your life. And it's so lovely to hear that from somebody who's lived there for 13 plus years. To come back to India. When you came back, you chose Bangalore, Chennai. Where did you choose to settle?
Bangalore. We chose Bangalore. So we chose Bangalore. Bangalore was the sort of the natural choice. My husband is from Bangalore, and he being in the cyber field, you know, we thought this is the right place to be in, and the software field. And for me, because I was from an education and tech background, he said anywhere should be fine for me. Like it doesn't really matter. So we chose Bangalore instead of Chennai, and it's going to be 9 years now since we've been here. So time flies.
So Bangalore, I'm sure, must have been very happy to have you back, because if Bangalore made you feel like the 13 years didn't transpire, that's quite a feeling that the city must have given you. After that, Saraswati, your husband, I'm sure, must have been welcomed into cyber world. But for you to find out where to move next, what exactly you need to do, when did Learning Matters happen? How did all that happen, your kids and you, and how did life begin in Bangalore?
It's quite beautiful how sort of seamlessly things seem to fall into place. So for the first few months, we've been just sort of focusing on settling in, and you know, kids being so young, giving them the attention that they need. But after that, so I had a good friend from high school who was here in Bangalore. And when she knew that I had moved back, she was working with Pearson Education. And, you know, she said, you being from education, it makes total sense to give it a shot and see if there's anything, any role here. And it was, and there was. And so I, I didn't even really try. Like I just, she recommended me and sent my resume, and I got a call the very next day, and went and met this person, and they had the right, they were looking for someone like me with my experience. And so started off as a consultant for some time. And, I think after about 2 years of working in Pearson, the idea for Learning Matters sort of arose in my friend and the person that she and I both reported into. So our manager had been thinking for a while that you know, all three of us believe very passionately about the very strong and undeniable impact that education can have in changing lives, right? So having, you know, with that passion and belief and believing that we can make a difference, we decided to start Learning Matters. The three of us came together as co-founders, and that is the story of how Learning Matters was born. And what we do primarily at Learning Matters is we focus on upskilling teachers. Because when you look at the education system, who's the backbone of the education system? It's the teachers. Who needs the most support? Who does the most work? The answer for everything is teachers. And yet, the topic of training teachers or is not given due importance. If you look at it, teaching is the one profession that creates all other professions, isn't it? But while we have such so many guidelines for staying upskilled, or you know, things keep changing in every domain, and the same thing in the teaching profession, but we don't think it is important to continue retraining our teachers or keep upskilling them after every 5 years or so. I mean, you have teachers who have been teaching for the last 30 years, right? And you ask them how often have they been upskilled? You know, do they know about the changes in pedagogical strategies or things like that? And chances are they'll say no. So they've continued doing what they're doing this in the same way for the last 30 years or 40 years. But haven't our children changed over the last 40 years? And haven't the needs changed? Children have changed drastically. Even children of 10 years back to children of today have very different level of exposure to technology. You know, careers have changed so much. So our teachers can't continue teaching the way they've already or always taught, right? So teacher training is something that we give a lot of importance to and we focus on. And the other thing that we focus on for both teachers and students is communicative English proficiency. Because if you think about it, that sort of has become the crucial determiner of a child's career success and even academic success. Because beyond the point, all your papers, everything are in English. Now, if you're not able to comprehend it very well, you're not going to be able to answer the questions very well. And then that begins the cycle of the bad grades and all of that, right? And teachers as well. If the teachers don't hear English, they don't have a chance to converse in English, then they will not be able to speak in English. And then that cycle repeats with their students. So we decided that these are the challenges that we're going to focus on. And that's what we focus on. We continue to focus on today at Learning Matters.
Okay. And when you say teachers, who are your primary target teachers in this case? Like, do you have them coming and is there a kind of an enrollment they do or a membership they take with Learning Matters? How do you take your thoughts, your ideas across to this beautiful fraternity, important fraternity, but sadly ignored fraternity called the teaching community?
Yeah, absolutely. We work directly with schools, Rashmi. So, and we focus on schools which are in tier two, tier three.
Okay.
Because our tier one schools, you know, they have enough. They have enough and more resources. They have enough and more access to technology, to new tools, to new products and solutions, as well as to companies who offer such solutions, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the minute you start driving out of the city and you head towards a tier two, you know, I mean, we see how drastically the landscape changes, and it's amazing how drastically the schools also change, right? And you go there and you see how much enthusiasm and aspiration they have. But how little they have in terms of resources. And so we focus on, and those are the schools that genuinely need people like us. So we focus on tier two, tier three. What we do is we work directly with the school. So the school signs up with us for its teachers. And then we conduct our training programs over the course of a year with the school. So we do a combination of delivery team, training team will go on site a few times, and then a few times it will be a online program.
Okay.
For them. So it's a combination of the two. And unlike other training programs where, you know, the trainers come in, They, you know, train for 2 days or 3 days, and then they're done, and then they go away, never to be heard from again.
Yeah.
Whereas we continue our relationship with the teachers over the year, right? So from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, there is so much that our team gets to know about each teacher, and truly understand their strengths and weaknesses, understand where they need help, and be able to work with them in a customized way.
Okay, so there's a lot of thought that has gone into designing this program and implementing it, and I'm sure feedback matters to you as well.
Of course.
But are there any stories that you hold very dear, Saraswati, to your heart, which make you feel so happy you're doing what you're doing and reaffirm that you're in the right direction?
Absolutely. We have so many stories. I think I'm sure there'll be a few specific ones that pop into my head, but I think overwhelmingly mostly it's just hearing from schools or from teachers, right? First of all, there are so many principals who are so delighted that people like us who want to work with them exist, right? And they say, in all my years, hardly anyone comes out to us and tells us about services like these, and the fact that you all are coming from Bangalore, but you're coming here and telling us you would like to work with us, and it's a huge thing for us. And they're very shocked as to how affordable the program is. The teachers, for them it's very eye-opening. The things that our trainers teach them make them very sort of self-aware, other than the theories and the practice of teaching, there is also a lot in the program that focuses on general empowerment of teachers. As we all know, a majority of our teachers are women, right? And it's been that way, and it will continue to be that way for a long time. I mean, you do have a few male teachers here and there, but they tend to be restricted to the physical education and things like that. Sometimes you have a subject teacher who's also a male, but it's overwhelmingly women, right? So there's also a lot that goes into helping them becoming more self-aware, helping them realize how they can empower themselves. So there's a lot of that also gets built into the program. So a lot of times in the beginning, I used to go out and train myself. My co-founder and I would do a lot of that ourselves, right? Now, of course, we have a big team that does it. But in those days, I remember more than for them, I think for me, it was incredibly humbling to see the school, see how little they had, but how kind and how wonderful they were, and how gracious, right? And so respectful of us. And those lessons are something that I can never forget, because we have so much in all senses. We have so much in all senses, right? So much stuff, physical stuff at home, so much going on. And yet we always find so much to be unhappy about or to grumble about. And then you go there and you see the school, and it's just a tiny thing. There's probably no paint. There's just one bathroom. The classrooms are, bare bones. They don't have a lot of, unlike our nice schools here in the cities, which have, colorful stuff everywhere. And you have the TV, you have, this, that, and all the fancy stuff. They have none of that, right? They're just bare bones. Teachers have very little physical resources, teaching aids to use for the students. Yet they're just so happy and so gracious about receiving, the training. And they, many times we've heard from teachers who said, we discuss a particular strategy and they say, I wish someone had told me this, a few years ago. This is so simple to do, but it's so, eye-opening. And just hearing those kinds of comments from them are, really sort of make your day, make it worthwhile, completely worthwhile. I think it's more, like I said, it's more about the life lessons we've learned, I've learned from traveling to all these places and seeing how tough it is to get there, right? Not all places are so easily connected by train, and so you have to do a hop and a skip and a jump, and you go there and you see, and then you say, you know, I have nothing to complain about. I have nothing to grumble about in my life, right? I think that has been very eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. True, very true. And you know, in a work like this, when you're giving so much of yourself, it's not what you're teaching them, but so much of you and pieces of you you leave behind. There are moments of recognition. There are moments of reflection that happen. So are there some special recognitions that you cherish and are happy that you got it looking back now, Saraswati?
See, recognition, okay. So I would say that, so we do a lot of work. We have a YouTube channel for teachers, which is all about, you know, sharing teaching tips and teaching tricks, you know, short videos, slightly long videos. We share a lot of communicative tips and all of that there. So I would say, you know, there are a lot of people who I think have watched those videos, and usually I tend to feature in them. And I, you know, talk about whatever it is. And sometimes we've done events in certain, we do events in different places where we try to connect with the schools and as a way of introducing learning matters to them and talking about what we do. And there have been people who have said, they smiled and waved at me and said, we've watched your videos, you know, and we just love them, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that feels so nice that it's actually overwhelming that, okay, there are people who are watching and who are learning and who are paying attention to what I'm saying. So that's a pretty big responsibility to hold.
Yeah. True. And recently there was an article on LinkedIn that you had put about being recognized 75 in the 75th year of independence. Would you like to share a little on that? Because that was a very nicely expressed post of yours that I really...
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a very big honor for Learning Matters to have been included on that list from NASSCOM. NASSCOM and India AI together put out this compendium of 75 at 75 is what they called it. And what they chose is they went through various sectors and highlighted organizations that were doing impactful work that were using technology or AI in some way, artificial intelligence. And so when it came to the education sector, it was really a thrill. We did not know there was such a compendium coming out until it actually came out, and then we were informed that we were part of that. It means a lot for the company, for the organization, and for every single person who works here, because you know, when you work in education, it's a very tough sector to work in, especially when you work with schools. Right? So when you are working in education, but you're creating a product that is, let's say, sold directly to children and families, that's a very different ball game from working with schools, because it's there are so many more challenges. And the fact that we, so our communicative English solution, which is called Tara, is built on the Alexa platform. So the content on it, the textbooks, all of that is ours. But then we are using the Alexa platform to create a conversational based format of teaching and learning English, right? So there are conversations, and then the students get to answer questions while Tara listens, and then she'll correct you and explain where and how you went wrong. So for us to have not just conceptualized such a solution, but then to actually bring it into day-to-day reality, that has been used by schools and by a few colleges across India. So to be on that 75 at 75 was a very big recognition for the organization. And for me, you know, personally, what I expressed, you know, myself, I know there was a company post as well, but what I express is, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, right, you keep looking at all these lists, right? you keep hearing about these lists, and they get a lot of prominence. These lists always get a lot of prominence, you know, 20 under 20, 30 under 30. And, you know, when we started Learning Matters, I was way, way beyond 30, right? So you already know I'm not going to make that list because I'm no longer under 30. And then slowly they came out with a 40 under 40 and 50 under 50 and, you know, all these things. So, you know, it was a little tongue in cheek of me when I said that. But, you know, I'd always wonder, you know, how does it feel to be one on this list? And then, you know, finally, you know, our moment came. So it wasn't 30 under 30 or 20 under 20, but it was 75 at 75. And I think the fact that it came out on the occasion of India's 75th was a big milestone and a big, big celebration for us.
Yeah. And when you reflect on such moments, you know for sure that you're on the right path. You are making a difference. So reflecting on those times, from where you started to that girl who was trying to find her foot everywhere she went and make an impact, to somebody who moved into nutrition, child development, special children. It's been quite a journey and quite a, not a straight journey, but with a lot of ups and downs, curves, yeah, and hairpin bends, which you didn't even expect as part of the journey.
Definitely.
Yeah. So how do you reflect at what you set out and where you are today?
That's a nice question. And I think a huge part of my journey, I would say I've been very fortunate to have met certain people along the way who, you know, who then became a big part of my journey. I think a big part of that is also, you know, I should say has been, you know, my ability to be very open-minded about things, right? So not very set, it has to be this way, it has to be that way, but be open to it and, you know, do that. I think that also plays a big part. And I, you know, I must say that a lot of this would not have been possible if you don't have a partner who is able to share that vision with you, right? So if you have someone, if your partner is unable to, you know, allow you the flexibility because of their own pressures and job demands and things like that, then it becomes increasingly difficult. And I don't mean like a woman, man, I'm just saying either one, it could be either one, right? But I think a big part of that has been the sort of the enthusiasm from my husband as well to say, yeah, you should do this. And if you don't, you know, leap into entrepreneurship now, you know, with people who are your friends, I mean, what better than that? So I think all of these have come together in a beautiful way to make my journey what it is. You know, I'm not one who sits in plans, you know. I flow with the tide kind of a thing, and you know, I attribute a lot to that as well. So I don't know, you know, is, you know, which is the chicken, which is the egg? Is it because of my attitude that you know, these things sort of cosmically came to me, or was it the other way around? Am I like that because these things came? I don't think I'll ever be able to tell. But definitely it's a bit of both, I think. it's been a wonderful journey. I mean, yeah, if I think back to life in the US and before that and now, and then there's so much left ahead as well, right? Yeah, so there's so many years to come, and you know, starting to think about, you know, what am I going to do when I'm in my 70s? You know, what should I continue doing that's going to be impactful? And when I think like that, I always think it'll be something to do with empowering women, right? I mean, I'm quite sure it'll be in that domain. But you know, so thinking now itself about, you know, what should I start or what should I start thinking about, you know, so that, you know, by the time you're in your late 60s, 70s, you already have something that you will continue doing and that will keep you going, right? You need something that gives you energy.
That's so true. And on this note, Saraswati, I'd like you to just step back 2 years when the whole world didn't expect what we were thrown into, the pandemic. There are so many reflective moments, spaces for all of us, which we were forced into, not that we took them by choice. And all of us had lessons from the pandemic. So what were your reflections from the pandemic?
Oh, so many. Okay, so on the slightly tongue-in-cheek or the funny side, my family might say, no, not so funny, but I think it is quite, it's quite scary how when you how much your you know, not being able to go out of the house and having to be inside, you know, how much that can actually affect our mood and our, you know, for those of us who quite like to go out of the house, and you know, there are people who are homebound and like to be at home and are at their functional best, you know, when they're like that. And then there are people like me who, you know, love to go out and come to the office and work from here. So I scared myself as to how my moods could vary, you know, and how I, you know, could, I was quick to get irritated or, you know, quick to snap at children, at my children and all of that. So that was one big revelation that was like, oh God, you know, I'm not not the nice person I always thought I was, right? There's definitely a very dark side to me, and you know, sort of figuring out how to keep that balanced, and you know, trying to look at those who had much less than what we did during those times, and then feeling ashamed, you know, like, oh God, I mean, look at them, they have nothing, and what am I complaining about, right? So so there was that side of it, but I think a few other lessons, and I think these were lessons that. Lessons, revelations, whatever we would like to call them, both during the lockdown time, but I think they're also generally relevant for life itself. Is one thing is, I think women in general, we need to get a lot better at accepting help, right? We don't immediately or very quickly accept help because in our, and I'm, you know, maybe I'm talking about Indian women, because culturally, traditionally, or over the hundreds of years, you know, there is a definition of what a good mom or a good good wife or a good mother should do. And so what I realized is, even when I was, you know, getting help, you know, I would have a tendency to say, no, I'll do it myself, because if I accept the help, then, you know, what does it say about me? Does it say that I'm not capable enough to do that? And at the end of the day, that's such a foolish thing to think, you know. Why do we think it's not okay to accept help, you know? So these days, I tell as many young women as I can, when I have the chance to, know, always say yes, you know, take the help that you get, be grateful for it, and you can always reciprocate some other day, and there will be, that's how the cycle goes, right? The other thing is asking for help. You know, we're very ashamed or very embarrassed to ask for help, you know, and again, you know, why, you know, we should, and asking, I think, is highly underrated, I think, you know, like, it's amazing how when you ask, it's amazing how most people will actually say yes and help you, you know, they just didn't know you needed help, right? So whatever the help is, or whatever you're asking for, it's quite amazing to see that. And of course, it's always a reciprocity. So do remember that you can't always be the asker. You equally have to be the giver as well. Yeah. And be open to that. The other thing is, I think what I realized personally is, you know, we all hold ourselves to sometimes very impossible standards, you know, when it comes to, you know, specifically to the home and all of that, and during the lockdown when most of us didn't have help coming in, you know, it was a complete lockdown and all of that, you know. And that was a time of great reflection for me, because it's like, okay, do the clothes have to be always dried my way and have to be folded my way? Because if that's going to be my stance, then I'm going to be the one having to do it every day, right? And so the sort of the, we know, we talk about learning, unlearning, relearning. So for me, it was a lot of relearning and readjusting my own so-called standards and expectations. You know, does it matter if the clothes are dried by my 8-year-old and my, you know, 11-year-old who are doing a good job, you know? So that was a lot of relearning for me, because I would say, go do it now, do it this way. And then they would just say, but why? We're also doing the same thing. I mean, how does it matter if I dry the clothes now or 1 hour later? And then I actually had no answer to that, right? So I had no good answer. Or, you know, telling them, no, you guys aren't folding it really well, or whatever it is, you know, cleaning it up. And then I realized, no, we, why am I holding myself up to these almost impossible sort of standards and expectations? Like, who cares, right? Who cares if there's dust on my coffee table? I mean, like, who's coming home to see it? And if someone is going to come to my home and judge me based on the dust on my coffee table, then I'm sorry, you must not be an actual good friend of mine, right? So I think that was a very nice unlearning that I went through. You know, like, why do I do certain things? You know, am I doing it for myself because I believe in it, or am I doing it because that's the way I assumed it should be, you know, because someone else is judging me for that? Or so I think that was good. And I think that was very good, very healthy for me. And I'm sure there were many who went through that.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people nodding their heads saying, oh, yes, for sure.
Yes. And one more thing I'd like to say is, you know, once I also realized that, you know, when you sort of delegate more and allow people around you, give them more responsibilities, they actually rise up to it, right? I mean, even my house help for that matter, you know, so she had a certain set of things that she would do. But after the lockdown and everything changed, I said, hey, what if I tell her to do a few more things? She's going to be very happy that she's getting to do some new things. And, you know, and it takes those things off my plate, so I can focus on something else. And that was great as well. I mean, giving her more things actually meant that she does it much better than I do it. And it also means that she keeps an eye on it and she does it every day. So she's also happy that she's getting to do, you know, more things. I'm also happy. So I'm like, okay, this is good. We need to do more of this as well, right? You know, give it to someone else. But then again, don't expect them to do it your way. Right, because my way is my way, their way is their way. So you have to meet. You have to meet in the middle, else you're going to lose your sanity.
True, and a perfect point to take three life lessons from you.
Okay, I don't know if I can come up with three more in addition to the, I think, the four that I've already shared. But I think one thing is, yeah, definitely one thing that I myself wished I had done differently when I was sort of the younger, right, the teenager, the adolescent Saraswati, or the 20s years old, you need to take every opportunity that comes your way. It could be an opportunity, anything, okay? It could be an opportunity to travel. It could be an opportunity to be part of a different project, to give a speech, to go and meet someone, you know, to just do something different, something new that you haven't done before. And I think a lot of times we overthink these, okay? Yeah. We think, but if I do this, then, you know, what will it mean to something else? Is that the right one for me to do? Should I really take that opportunity up? Or sometimes we just plain lazy, who'll do that? And, you know, or we think about, are we good enough for it? So these are the usual reactions that crop up. And I think no matter what it is, right? Later, now in my 40s, when I look back, I think, my God, how much time I had back then, right? Mm-hmm. You know, no kids, you know, when you're either a grad student or you're just starting off in your career, how many opportunities I had to try so many different things, whatever those could be. And why did I say no? You know, that was such a foolish thing to do, because experience is the greatest teacher. And I think the more experiences young people have, the richness of the wisdom that you gain from those can't be really made up by anything else. You know, and I think the greatest thing is, don't overthink it. You've been invited to take part in some new project or some activity. Just do it first. Just say yes, do it. Learn from it. It might teach you that you're good in something that you never thought of, or it might show you that, okay, you really don't want to do something. Whatever it is, you learn from it, right? So, you know, this, you know, say yes first to the opportunity. Then figure out, you know, how you're going to do it, you know. And there's no such thing as, you know, I'm good at this, as I'm bad at this. we're all on a continuum of learning. That's the second thing I've learned over the years is there's no black and white, right? I mean, in my younger years, I used to think that a lot. For whatever it is, it could be values, it could be attitudes, it could be your stance on issues, you know. I used to say, no, you're either this or that. You know, you either think this or you believe in that. But over the years, I've realized, no, it's not like that. There is so much gray and so many shades of gray. And that's okay too. That's okay too, because, you know, we're not machines, right? We're not a zero or a one always. It's not binary. It's just, there is so many things that go on. And I think we got to give those grays credit, you know, and accept the grays, you know. So, yeah. So I would say, I think these two things are, I'll always say, you know, ask for help and take the help and always reciprocate it, because it is an amazing thing. It's to see how people actually step up and help out. You know, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, we are social animals, and everyone's life every single day is so different, isn't it? So I may really need help today from someone for something, and I may be able to pass that on to someone else tomorrow. And that's the beauty of life. So I think, you know, we women really need to step up the game on asking and accepting help. The other thing that I think I've been realizing a lot is, I think we women also need to do a better job of speaking up and speaking out for ourselves. And, you know, I'm talking about, you know, we say, you know, we've heard these phrases, right? I mean, walk the walk, walk the talk and all of that. I think we should talk the walk, you know, like we do a lot, but we don't necessarily talk about what we do. You know, and that's a big, big disservice we do to ourselves, and it's a big no-no. We need to slowly change that. You know, there are so many people who do very little, but then are able to highlight themselves very well. And I say, why should we not do that? You know, and I think, and that again is something that's ingrained in us. You know, societally, culturally. I think we should change that.
I'm not at all surprised with these beautiful life lessons that you've given, Saraswati. It's such a pleasure. Honored to have you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. And just continue to inspire, because you simplify everything that you're saying and you make it seem that life is not at all complicated. It's how we look at it that looks complicated from a distance. But when you get down to do the task, it's really simple on hand.
You've taken the words from my mouth. I mean, these are things that I've been saying of late a lot. I mean, even within the family as well. Like, you know, I think we human beings, I think we women, we overcomplicate, right? And as simple as, you know, if there's something going on, and once I've said it out loud, I don't need to worry about it anymore. Yeah. Because you already know. So why should I worry anymore? So I think you're absolutely right. And it's almost like you're reading my mind, Rashmi. And yes, I think we overcomplicate. I think it's so much simpler. If we can learn how to let go of the fears, and if we can let go of the judging ourselves first and foremost, right? And then judging other women too. So both. I think the power, the strength that we have is just amazing. Every single woman, right, that I know has so much power and strength. And if we could just turn that positively on ourselves and on the women in our lives, just imagine what we could do.
I know. It's magic. Even thinking of it is a visual delight.
I know. And I should thank you for so much for having me as a guest on You and I. I've thoroughly enjoyed conversing with you, and I wish you all the best for many, many, many more wonderful episodes.
Thank you, Saraswati. If there's any way I can contribute to Learning Matters, I'll be more than happy to do it as a volunteer. If there's anything that I can do, and just continue weaving your magic, because you are magic, and the way you just put it all together seems so seamless, and such a beautiful pattern emerges. So God bless you. Continue to inspire and be who you are, Saraswati, the goddess of learning.
You too, Rashmi. Thank you so much. And I'm sure you are inspiring so many women, and I know that you are in your work as well. So thank you for all that you do for empowering women. I think it's a very critical thing. And those of us that are in a position to do so must do so. You know, it's a disservice if we don't. So thank you so much as well. And I look forward to finding wonderful ways to collaborate with you.
Pleasure completely.
Yeah. thank you so much, Rashmi.
Take care, Saraswati. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye. Yeah.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.